Pardon me?
This is for you. Dr. McCray is sick today. So if you want to sit here, you can. You want to be on the end? Okay. Here you go. And there you go.
How's everything? Going to get some business cards?
Yes.
No hurry. I just want.
No, you need them. Definitely. I'm just trying to think if I need any information from you to fill it out. I'll probably just email you the template. You can tell me if it looks okay. Via email?
Yeah.
Say yes or.
Where's the restroom?
You have to go.
Oh, I
you have to go around. You want to use my badge?
Yeah, I actually think every day.
Hey, okay. So.
It
go,
works there, right?
Yeah, it should. Yeah. You walk around to that
in like 5 minutes.
I got, I have an iPad too.
Oh, okay.
So that you can look up anything without needing paper. And I'll talk to you about it for a few minutes after. Is that okay?
Okay.
Okay. Set up.
Okay, yes. Can you convince
me? Very definitely tired.
Sometimes you can talk about my times. It's California.
I think so.
Yeah, I'm
trying to think.
Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I see all of our commissioners are present, other than Commissioner McRae, who has an excuse to be absent in the fact that he's ill. Moving on to item two, can I have a motion for the adoption of the agenda? All in favor? So moved. And can item three, an adoption of our April 25th regular minute meetings. Are there any changes? All in favor? So moved. Calling on Trent Rohr.
Good morning, commissioners. I'll start with some activity at the federal level, none of which is any good. The first is, there have been a couple of proposed rules that have come out of the Trump administration over the last 2 to 3 weeks that have potential impact either on our programs or our clients or both. The first is a notice of public rule from the Office of Management and Budget, and it's seeking comment on the differences among the various consumer price indexes produced by the Bureau of Labor Statistics as well as the Bureau of Economic Analysis. And the particular focus is how these differences might influence the estimation of the official poverty measure. What we've heard is that the administration's goal is to use a lower measure of inflation when adjusting the poverty level each year, and by doing that would lower the income threshold that would define what 100% of federal poverty would be. Why is that important? It's important because most of the benefit programs that we administer use the federal poverty level in some way to determine eligibility. And so by lowering that level each year, what it does, in particularly higher cost areas, it reduces the eligibility level, meaning fewer people would be eligible. So over time, this policy should the poverty level decrease, over time it would take away eligibility for SNAP, which is CalFresh, Medicaid, TANF. And again, in high cost regions where the poverty level really doesn't reflect what actual income levels define poverty, particularly in San Francisco, this would be a move that would hurt our clients for sure. And so we'll be submitting comments in opposition to this along with many other partners. The other notice of public rule that came out of the administration came out of HUD, and this has to do with eligibility for public housing and for Section 8 or housing choice vouchers among mixed status families, mixed immigration status families. What the rule seeks to do is to narrow the eligibility for some immigrant households for public housing and for Section 8. Again, it's a proposed rule, and it's somewhat complicated, but the impact particular would be among citizen children who are living in public housing but whose parents are undocumented. And so we're going to be looking further into this and partnering with many other city agencies as well as some state partners to submit comments in opposition, which we're pretty used to doing at this point with the administration. The third area is around the public charge rule, and what we're hearing is that this will be released very soon, perhaps even this weekend. If you remember, I've talked about the changes or potential changes in public charges many times here. It could potentially impact eligibility for some of our households in San Francisco, but more importantly, the chilling effect that it might have should the word be out that immigrants' receipt of public benefits would count against them towards their path to citizenship. If the rule is released, it's important to note that it would not go into effect for another 60 days, so we would have plenty of time to inform our community-based organizations, our immigrant households, and others on what the impact of the rule change might be. And then the fourth area in the federal level is and this is per Commissioner Semmel's question and request last month, which is around the census, and specifically what the city is doing or what the Human Services Agency is doing with respect to ensuring that everyone gets counted. In addition to being involved in a lot of different committees and making suggestions of what the city should do, we're partnering with the Office of Civic Engagement and Immigrant Affairs in the program that they're funding with community-based organizations to get the word out, and our role is to provide funding for 30 to 40 Jobs Now participants who would be in the Community Jobs Program placed in these community-based organizations to help with the enumeration and the outreach, and in particular in our immigrant communities who the census, it seems like, is intentionally attempting to exclude them from the count. At the state level, of course, the May revise was released the second Friday or second Thursday in May. There was plenty of good news contained in that. In the governor's both in the governor's May budget revision as well as the legislative response. And the governor, what he included in his May budget, which is, these are in addition to what was in January, the governor is proposing $40 million increase for childcare for CalWORKs families to establish what's called continuous eligibility in stage one childcare, which basically means that a family would receive childcare for 12 months irrespective of whether or not their participation levels drop below the required level. This is something that San Francisco has done under Project 500 or Families Rising program by using general funds to bridge that gap. But this is proposing to use state dollars for continuous eligibility, which is good for our families. In addition, the governor's proposed an additional $24 million statewide for the CalWORKs Housing Support Program. That would be anywhere from $800,000 to $1 million more for San Francisco. He included $15 million more in state dollars, which translates to $30 million total fund when you account for the federal drawdown for county administration of the CalFresh expansion to our SSI population. Another $18 million for our resource family approval work under CCR, and another $22 million to continue our foster parent recruitment and retention efforts, again, under the continuum of care reform and child welfare. Those are all good and positive movements, and the legislature has further, in their budget committee actions, added dollars in a few other priority areas for us, the first being the CalWORKs earned income disregard changes. This would basically allow for families to have more income and remain eligible for CalWORKs, recognizing both the increase in minimum wage as well as the high cost of living in California. The second area is funding for the Family Urgent Response System, known as FERS. And this is a 24-hour mobile crisis response for basically to preserve placements for kids and youth in foster care. Caregivers or youth who are having in crisis or need additional support, particularly through mental health supports, could call the 24-hour hotline and get a response within hours to preserve placements and provide caregivers with an additional level of intense support. And then the third area the legislature is looking to restore is the Bringing Families Home initiative, and this is housing subsidies for homeless families engaged in child welfare. The idea being, when the lack of housing is a barrier to reunification, the housing subsidy would serve as that bridge and allow families to become reunified. So again, all good news, and the state has the revenue is again higher than anticipated, and some of that additional revenue is going to areas that we wholeheartedly support. Locally, in our budget, we continue to work with the Mayor's Budget Office on our budget priority items that were above the budget that you all approved and forwarded to the Mayor in February. There's a whole list of enhancements that we're working with the Mayor's Office to get included in our budget. Nothing official yet, but we've had a really encouraging discussions with the Mayor and her budget team, and so we'll see likely good news when the budget's submitted to the board on June 1st. Probably the biggest area of work in our agency, really the last several months, but certainly the last month, is around the CalFresh expansion to SSI recipients. Coincidentally, May 1st was CalFresh Awareness Month, and we used that really to get the word out about this expansion. There was a feature article on the front page of the Bay Area section of the Chronicle that hopefully you all saw. There was also KCBS Radio covered it, and Noel Simmons from my staff did an interview as well on KCBS. We've been doing, yesterday was our first, and then the second one is today, basic community education forums in partnership with the Department of Aging and Adult Services and the Food Bank. And this is basically to talk about the expansion to our community-based partners, talk to them about how to help clients enroll, how to explain the expansion to SSI recipients. Both sessions are booked to capacity, about 200 organizations attending. We talk about how to enroll people, as I said. We give them a partner toolkit that talks about the expansion, talks about the client impact, which is over 40,000 people, as you know. We started taking applications for the expansion on May 1st, even though the benefits don't begin to be issued until June 1st. As of yesterday, we already have had almost 6,600 SSI recipients apply for CalFresh, which is about 16% of all SSI recipients citywide, which is much, much higher number of applicants than we had anticipated. So the word is definitely getting out, and you know, kudos to the HSA's communications team and the CalFresh and SF Benefits Net team, who've really done a great job in initially getting the word out and then making it easy and developing a lot of channels for folks to apply for and begin the application process for CalFresh. You may have seen the mayor's announcement yesterday, and there was a little article, I think, in the Chronicle today. Something that I'm particularly proud of that we're partnering in, because it's not something that we'd particularly or typically do as a human services agency. In fact, I think we're the first public human services agency to partner in the following way. And what the announcement was is Museums for All over the summertime. And the mayor announced this yesterday, and the program will run from June 1st to September 2nd. And it will provide free admission throughout the summer to more than 15 museums citywide for anyone who has an EBT card or a Medi-Cal card, which basically, if you're on public benefits in San Francisco, yeah, you're eligible or you're entitled to free museum attendance, you and three others. And so a family could attend for free. And this is the Exploratorium, the Academy of Sciences, the De Young Museum of Modern Art, really the great cultural institutions of the city. You know, it really builds on and this department's and the mayor's commitment to provide equitable access to city resources. As far as I know, we're the first city in the nation to extend free museum admission to people with limited income, and it's not a small number of people. We have over 200,000 individuals receiving one of our public benefit programs and who will be eligible. And so to the extent we can, we'll track receipts and see how many families and single adults and seniors took us up on this offer. But it's really a neat thing that we could do as a human services agency. And kudos to Dan Kelly from our planning staff and others who really spearheaded this. I think started this discussion a couple years ago with the treasurer's office and others. And it's nice to see this finally come to fruition. In our Family and Children Services Division, we had our biannual resource family or foster parent appreciation event Friday, May 10th. Thanks, Commissioner Yamasaki, for attending. It was really well attended by our resource families. And they had a great time. And it's just a way for us to extend to them our thanks and to recognize how important they are to taking care of our kids in the city, and particularly with the continuum of care reform. They're importance is even that much greater because of the reliance on family care over institutional and group care. The next event for them will be in December. It'll be our annual holiday party, and hopefully many of you, or most of you, or all of you, can attend. So with that, I will conclude. I know we have a lengthy agenda today, and recognizing some staff as well. So I'll turn it over to you, commissioners, for questions or comments.
Are we having the annual softball tournament this year?
Important stuff. We are. Dan Kelly's in the back. Dan, you want to come forward and announce it?
Thank you for asking, Commissioner Kahn. It'll be on June 15th at Moscone Field. We're really excited about it. The Giants and Warriors organizations are playing again this year. They'll be one of the first games of the day. We have 26 teams this year, and last year was such a great one. There was such a spirit of sportsmanship and doing something good. We're really excited about it carrying over this year. So thank you for your support and for asking about it.
June 15th.
June 15th, Moscone Field, which is in the marina.
Commissioner Kahn is asking about softball, and I'm going to ask about museums. Just a little difference between us. How are we publicizing this?
How are we publicizing it? You want to take that?
I'm sorry.
Commissioner Snell asked how we're publicizing the Museums for All.
So one of the things we've been thinking a lot about is we have a relationship with almost every low-income household in the city. We have 225,000 clients. So we've been doing mailings, for one, to our clients and advertising other things that have been, that are free, other free museum events, for example, Rutgen Park. So one of the first things we'll do is mail a postcard to every single Medi-Cal recipient in San Francisco, letting them know about what museums and what events will be free for them this summer. And we'll work with the school district and other institutions, our nonprofit partners as well, to try to really swell the crowd. This is a chance for our nonprofit partners to create community with their clients, and so we're really excited. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
Thanks.
So item five is our employee of the month. And this month we have employees of the month. We have a trifecta of people, and we have Marcus Falls, Thomas Heath, and David Vlad Oliver. Am I pronouncing it properly? Well, he's not here today, so I'm sorry I didn't pronounce it right. Please don't tell him. The commission is pleased to honor these three men, social work supervisors with the Family and Children's Services, and they are the May Employees of the Month. Mr. Heath, Mr. Falls, and Mr. Vlad Oliver. Close. What's his first name?
David.
David, okay. Who have provided transportation and supervised visitation for children, youth who are in foster care. On any given day, Tom, Marcus, and David are scheduling 40 to 70 trips throughout the Bay Area and Northern California. They collaborate with First Stop, the East Bay Visitation Center, our family resource centers, child welfare workers, social workers, schools, therapists, and caregivers to support the goals of reunification and permanency for the FCS families. It is their staff, the human service techs, who drive as far away as Fresno, Sacramento, and Stockton to make sure children see their parents, from supervised visitations to weekend overnights. In April alone, the techs completed a total of 1,199 transports on weekdays and 145 transports on weekends. Tom, Marcus, and David have taken the lead in implementing a new demand response transportation management and scheduling software that will provide the techs with real-time access to their schedules while in the field. The techs will receive immediate notification of trip cancellations or changes on their mobile devices, and the software will improve operations throughout data collecting and streamline the process for managing the transportation schedule. Tom, Marcus, and David are not just supervisors and managers, they are also passionate about serving children and families. All three will take calls at all times of the day and night, and Marcus and David have each logged in 200 hours of overtime working weekends to make sure children see their families. They make every effort to provide excellent customer service, and they are solution-focused in a dynamic and constantly changing work environment. In recognizing Tom, Marcus, and David as the May Employees of the Month, we are also honoring the contributions they and the human service technicians make every day to the well-being of our families. On behalf of my fellow commissioners and myself, congratulations to each of you. Your work is highly valued and greatly appreciated. I'm going to ask for some comments from Mr. Orr.
Thank you, President Kahn. Congratulations, you three, but you two. We have in the city, due to a lot of factors, one of which is we have a lot of relatives who don't live in San Francisco, but we have a lot of kids placed out of county, which presents a lot of different challenges, and one of them being to ensure visits with their birth parents. And we know that visitation is, really good visitation is vital to, and constant visitation is vital to reunification efforts, both to get reunified, but also for those reunifications to hold. And that's principally what our techs are doing, is transporting kids to other things as well, but to visit their parents. And it's not just driving, it's, you know, driving and interacting and being another piece of support for our kids. And we have gone so much further in having an effective system of transportation. I mean, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, it was very difficult and somewhat haphazard, and now it's pretty seamless. It supports our child welfare workers, supports our kids and our families, and I'm really so pleased that we get to honor you guys for helping make that happen. And it really does make a huge difference for our kids, and so thank you. This is the least we can do, is honor you this way.
Item 6 on our agenda is Maggie Donahue. Item 6 is Maggie Donahue. Maggie, you got a haircut.
Yeah. I'm not Maggie Donahue.
I know you're not.
On behalf of Joan and myself, Barry Johnson, I am really pleased to honor the great work that Maggie Donahue has done over the very many years that she's been here in a variety of roles serving children and families. And I think it's a great indicator. It's just a great event that she gets to honor her staff, because she cares really deeply about her staff. When I think of her, she really goes out of her way to try to advocate for and care for her staff and to serve the kids and families. Sorry. Better? Do I need to repeat that?
Yes. No. You can start over. You can start over.
Okay. And I'm not going to belabor it, because Maggie's very modest. So we have a number of folks that wish to honor her with certificates. Joan and So I have an honorary certificate here signed by Joan and Trent that I'm going to hand over to you. And by our commissioners, which says, in grateful recognition of the 35 years of distinguished, dedicated, and effective service to the citizens of the city and county of San Francisco, with sincere best wishes for a long, happy, and healthy retirement. And also Mayor Breed wanted to get in the game. So this says, whereas on behalf of the City and County of San Francisco, I am pleased to recognize and honor Maggie Donahue of the Human Services Agency on the occasion of her retirement. For the last 35 years, your tireless dedication to providing outstanding service to the residents of San Francisco has been truly commendable and is an achievement that reflects the very best in professionalism. Your tireless work as a public servant has contributed positively to the vitality of our city. Best wishes on your retirement.
Maggie.
Just one correction.
Beat me
to it's actually 31 Maggie. Years. 35, I might not be here.
Maggie, before you speak, may I say something?
And I want to say something.
I first met Maggie Donahue 30 years ago when she was working for Mayor Art Agnos. And I'm sure she remembers that he called the clergy into his office and said that there were not enough shelter beds and we had to step up and do something. And I got to know her then, and I've known her for all.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Now, before Maggie speaks, sorry. She's anxious to get out of here. I got to meet Maggie when I started with then DHS in 1996, and she was working over the family system for homelessness under Jim Buick was overseeing the homeless division, and then Maggie was promoted to oversee that division. And in addition to seeing the interfaith shelter become as vital as it is today in providing shelter for homeless during the winter months, the first supportive housing units and buildings came on under Maggie's leadership. And that's supportive housing is the cornerstone to our city's strategy for homelessness. We now have over 9,000 units, and the very first buildings came on under Maggie. She had a vision for how to serve homeless people, homeless families. I remember being a planner and going to her retreats that she would lead, and she would be, you know, Maggie brings passion to whatever she does, and I was always taken by her energy and her passion and her commitment. And she always did, you know, she struggled with something. You know, but she went deep. And she cared. And someone who was fresh and new in government in 1996, I had a perception on what government was, and Maggie was the opposite of my perception. It was people who cared, people who were dedicated and worked really, really hard. And in very stressful times under Mayor Brown then. And she took her management role in family and children with the same vigor and enthusiasm, and really, you know, we got to honor the tech supervisors today, which is great because it really has come a long way under Maggie's leadership and really hard work. And she's just an enthusiastic, smart, dedicated leader, and we're going to miss her. And on a personal note, when I was appointed in the job at a young age of 30, she is always very, very supportive. You know, always unwavering, providing her advice, whether solicited or not, which I appreciated. And honestly, really helped me get my bearings. And so I always appreciate that, Maggie. So congratulations. We'll miss you.
Thank you. Commissioners, President Khan, and Trent, it's truly an honor to be here. Wasn't something I asked for but I'm glad you all did it. So I have over the span of 31 years built my career in as a public servant, and there are certain memories that I will take with me, certain people that I will always remember, and the honor and pride I take in having served the city. I remember the Interfaith Winter Shelter Program and making ham and cheese sandwiches with St. Vincent de Paul to take to the churches. I remember with Trent going to the Board of Supervisors to secure the first general fund investment for eviction prevention programs. I remember cutting the ribbon on the first emergency shelter for older youth. And I also will always remember Arlene Hilton and the passion and energy she brought when we recognized that transitional youth needed services and really needed support as they left foster care. So, people, my staff are awesome. And every day they make such a difference in family and children's services. My clerks, my clerk supervisors, getting those court files to the court on time, copying those case files. You guys are really amazing. The techs and the tech supervisors, while we've had our challenges, I will be honest, they're like the most fun people ever. it has really been a pleasure working with you, totally. And I think really what I have the most respect for are the nonprofit partners, you know, who really are on the front lines every day. And I think of all of the memories I will take with me are just the incredible people I've met, like Martha Ryan, you know, who've inspired me over and over again as to what public service is all about. And there are others, I just can't remember their names. and finally, I think that in this day and age, all of us who choose public service as a career should be proud and should know that government is here. We are the safety net in a market-based economy. And every day, it doesn't matter what position we're in, you know, where we are within the agency, we really make a difference, and we should all know that. So it is with gratitude and deep appreciation that I thank you, but most importantly,
Item 7 on our agenda is asking for Noel Simmons to speak with us about the CalFresh expansion.
Okay. Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay,
thank you.
Great. So Trent previewed a little bit of my presentation in his comments, but I'm going to go into a little bit more detail about this very exciting policy change that is taking effect in just about a week on June 1st, which will make tens of thousands of low-income San Franciscans eligible for the CalFresh program for the first time in decades. Just a quick refresher on CalFresh, although I know this group doesn't need it. CalFresh provides a monthly food benefit to low-income people. Those benefits are issued via an electronic EBT card and can be used at grocery stores, at farmers markets, and at a select number of participating restaurants around the city, about 50 restaurants that participate in the restaurant meals program. On average, the monthly benefit in San Francisco is $210. There is a minimum benefit of $15, and the benefit can go up almost to $200 a month based on household size, income, and expenses. Those benefits roll over from month to month, so sometimes we hear people say, oh, it's not really worth all the paperwork for just $15 a month. But any unused benefits roll forward, and so we know that some households, for example, if they're getting a relatively small monthly amount, let those benefits accumulate and then have a nice pot of funding to buy perhaps a holiday meal once or twice a year. Again, to be eligible for CalFresh, you just have to meet the income eligibility limits. Legal permanent residents and qualified immigrants are eligible, and I want to stress that under current federal and state rules, CalFresh is not considered a public charge. We hope that that won't change. We'll see in the coming weeks. And then the policy change that we're talking about today will expand CalFresh eligibility to SSI and SSP recipients. I'll come back to who those folks are in just a minute. One other thing I wanted to mention is that in addition to the nutrition benefit itself, there are a number of perks that CalFresh recipients qualify for. They get discounted Muni passes, as we heard, free and discounted admission to museums here in the city. Through our Market Match program, CalFresh recipients who use their EBT card at a farmer's market can get up to $10 in free produce on top of the benefit amount that's on their card. And then purchase of hot meals at restaurants, as I mentioned a moment ago. The new policy that's taking effect next week will make federal recipients of supplemental security income benefits eligible for CalFresh for the first time since the 1970s. This is a significant expansion of the public safety net for a group of low-income individuals who are struggling to get by in a very high cost of living market on a fixed income. A recent report through our Department of Aging and Adult Services found that as many as 1 in 3 older adults in San Francisco are struggling with food insecurity, meaning that they don't always know where their next meal is coming from. This policy change is going to be a significant way to mitigate that reality. This policy change has already started to get some pickup in our local media market. We've had some coverage in the Chronicle and local radio, both in English outlets and language outlets, and that's really due to the good work of our communications team. The state did a webinar last week on the cash out expansion and really highlighted San Francisco as being the first county that got this message out to the local media market. So I really want to give kudos to our communications team for being on top of that. So this policy change is actually a long time coming. This is something that advocates around the state have been working on for well over a decade. Dating back to the 1970s, California has been operating under what was called the cash out policy. And what that meant was that SSI recipients did not qualify for CalFresh, but back in the 70s, the state decided to add $10 to the SSI-SSP benefit, which was meant to cover nutrition needs for seniors and persons with disabilities. Over the years, that $10 amount was never increased. And so, as you can imagine, $10 today a month maybe buys you one or two meals in the month. It's clearly inadequate to support the nutritional needs of any household. AB 1811, passed by the state legislature last year, reversed that longstanding cash-out policy and makes SSI recipients eligible for CalFresh now on top of their regular federal benefit. So who are SSI and SSP recipients? Again, what we're talking about, SSI is a federal benefit for individuals who are age 65 or older, blind or disabled. On top of the federal benefit, there's something called the SSP, which is a state-funded benefit that increases the value of the SSI grant. there are nearly 41,000 SSI recipients in San Francisco, roughly half female, half English speaking, half non-English speaking. Few other demographics here. We can see that roughly half of the SSI recipients in San Francisco qualify for the program on the basis of age and the other half on the basis of having a disability. Of course, some may have both. We see that similar to the overall demographics of low-income individuals in the city, this population is heavily Chinese and API, about a quarter white, 14% African-American, 10% Latino, and 3% other. This is a map of where SSI recipients live in San Francisco. The darker shading indicates a greater concentration of recipients, and so you can see that the southeast sectors, as well as Tenderloin and south of Market, are where most SSI recipients live. So in addition to households comprised only of SSI recipients, there are some SSI recipients who live already in a household that receives CalFresh. But today, the CalFresh benefit going to that household does not provide a benefit to the SSI recipient. That will change in a week. Part of the message that we're trying to get out is that for existing households who have an SSI member in them, they don't actually need to take any action to apply for this new benefit that's available on June 1st. We'll be automatically adding them to the CalFresh benefit the next time that they come in to do business with the county, which happens at least once every 6 months. For that group of participants, it's also possible that overall CalFresh benefits going to the household may decrease slightly. We expect this to happen in a relatively small number of cases, but part of the reason why this policy change was so long in coming was that there was this concern that some households would be better off under the policy change and some would be worse off. To address that problem, the state legislature created two new state-funded nutrition programs that would mitigate the loss of CalFresh benefits for some SSI households who find themselves in this circumstance. However, that state-funded benefit won't quite reach everybody, so there are still a few households that may be worse off, and we'll be trying to communicate in that in the best way that we can to families, and I think it's something that the state will be looking at over the first year of implementation to see if additional funding or adjustment to the state-funded benefits is necessary. I want to talk just a little bit about what we've been doing in the way of community outreach. We have, as you can see here, a calendar of different media events, community forums, social media campaigns, enrollment events out in the community, so that we can really make sure that we're getting the word out to those 41,000 individuals who are eligible and encouraging them to take up this new benefit. We are leading that work here in San Francisco, but also joined by a number of really amazing outreach partners that deserve some acknowledgement. I won't read through all of them, but you can see their logos there up on the screen. I do want to in particular note that we've been working very closely with our Department of Aging and Adult Services, given that this is a population that they clearly interact with every day. The staff in the In-Home Supportive Services program are going to be going into the homes of IHSS recipients and asking them if they want CalFresh, which is something they've never done before. This is a real sign of the way that we are working deliberately and strategically to integrate our services between the Department of Human Services and the Department of Aging and Adult Services. Our call to community partners is really threefold. We're asking them to help promote this benefit to all of the clients that they touch in their day-to-day work, help educate about what this policy change means, and then assist community members to apply in our offices or via phone or via the web. We've created a partner toolkit. This is being distributed this week at two different community forums. We had one yesterday at the main library. We have one this afternoon at the Lighthouse for the Blind. Each forum had about 100 people enrolled to attend, and we'll be distributing this partner toolkit and lots of good information to make sure that we're leveraging our community partners to help with this outreach. Again, the ways for people to apply are to go online and apply through getcalfresh.org, a very user-friendly, simple web interface that takes 10 minutes for someone to initiate their CalFresh application. They can certainly call our service center or come in to any of our three service centers at 1440 Harrison, 1235 Mission, and 2 Goff to apply.
Noel, may I ask a question?
Please.
Have you been in touch with the faith-based social service agencies?
We have, absolutely, Commissioner. They're some of our greatest partners. We have Episcopal Community Services, we have St. Anthony's, we have Glide, who have all been invited to our community forums and in many cases are helping with application assistance. This slide, in fact, speaks to the way that we are trying to help make the benefits accessible to people. We know that sometimes it's difficult, especially for an older or disabled population, to make their way into our offices, and so we're trying to take our services out to the community. We're doing that by using our community-based partners to help with application assistance. We are also sending our own eligibility workers out to what we call outstations in the community. We have 10 sites now, and we're expanding that further to really go to where clients are. So new this summer, we will send our eligibility workers out to the adult and disability resource centers, for example, congregate meal sites, supportive housing sites, to meet people where they're at. Just a quick reminder that this policy change, we have about 50,000 CalFresh recipients on our caseload today. And as I said earlier, there are 41,000 SSI recipients who are becoming newly eligible. So this policy change has the potential to nearly double our CalFresh caseload. You will remember, Commissioners, that earlier this year we took a budget supplemental forward to the Mayor's office and to the Board of Supervisors. They approved that, allowing us to fill 33 new positions to help us deal with that increased workload demand as the caseload begins to grow. We also got additional state funding this year to support those new positions. And I really want to take a minute to just give kudos to the staff in the CalFresh program. They've been doing training. They've been learning new changes to our automation system. They've been changing their business processes, implementing enhanced outreach efforts. We've really been preparing this for a solid 9 months since the legislature passed this in last year's state budget, and we finally arrived to the point where our lobbies are full. The phone calls are coming in. As Trent mentioned earlier, over 6,000 SSI recipients applied in the first 3 weeks of May. So that's just outstanding, and I want to thank the staff who are on the front lines of helping those customers. I think that's all, Commissioners, but I'm happy to take any questions that you might have.
Any questions you'd like to ask? Okay. Thank you. And can I ask for a motion to approve our consent calendar? All in favor? Aye. Moving on to commission business. Calling on Dan Kelly.
Thank you, Commissioners. This is a contract extension, but it's taking place within the context of a very large expansion of the Diaper Bank program. This is with Help a Mother Out, a nonprofit that operates the Diaper Bank in partnership with us and their fiscal agent, Community Initiatives. This year, the diaper benefit will be extended to CalFresh families with children under 3. The purpose of the program is to augment the resources of low-income families with kids under 3. So the California Community Budget Initiative, which calculates basic income needed for families in various communities, has estimated recently that the cost for a single mother with a preschooler and a school-age kid to live in San Francisco and live a plain life, no restaurants, no movies, no birthday parties at Chuck E. Cheese, is $104,000. The median rent for a one-bedroom apartment in San Francisco right now is $3,700 a month. To be eligible for CalWORKs, that same family could make no more than $1,395 a month. A family eligible for, if that family were apply for CalWORKs or CalFresh without CalWORKs, they could make no more than $3,400. So this is a chance to augment family resources. The diaper cost for a single parent with a young child could be as much as $80 a month. When we first did the research, we were finding that the corner stores around public housing were breaking open packs of diapers and selling one diaper at a time for 50 cents. So we couldn't provide more cash to families without jeopardizing their benefits. This is a way to supplement the resources. So a lot has happened since we first initiated this contract. It was the first diaper bank in a public sector setting in the United States. It's still the only one. A lot of complex logistics go into it. A few months ago, you recognized Star Dark as the employee of the month. He is very he's responsible for shelving the diapers once they get here. We've distributed 3 million diapers to 2,700 children since we started this contract. Since we started, diaper need has entered into the national dialogue about family poverty. President Obama made a mention of it. We have fielded lots of queries from other communities that are interested in starting diaper banks. The Santa Clara Law School of Law has recently incorporated diaper need into its reproductive rights classes and has talked to us to find out more about our program. The state of California added a $30 per month cash supplement to CalWORKs for diapers a few years ago and cited our program in the legislative language. We continue to provide diapers knowing how extreme the cost of living was in San Francisco. This last year, the state of California also created $10 million in grants to seed and expand diaper banks in the community. That was grew out of conversations that have been happening at the state level. They have talked to us repeatedly about our program. The state assemblywoman who put this in the budget, Lorena Gonzalez, had come and talked to us at one point about our program. So expanding this to CalFresh is going to increase, it's going to more than double the number of families and children who are eligible for free diapers, a free full monthly supply of diapers. This is a huge expansion. It's 133% increase in distribution at no additional cost to us, because Help a Mother Out was one of those recipients of a state grant, independent of us, and they have agreed to apply it as an in-kind match to their work with us. They will be supplying 1 million diapers in addition to what they're already doing solely for CalFresh families. Help a Mother Out manages the distribution of the diapers. We have, at this point, 8 different sites in the city. 3 of our buildings, 5 family resource centers, so that a family on CalWORKs could go to a neighborhood resource center to pick up their diapers as well. They don't have to come all the way down here. This is going to expand it to our 1440 Harrison office and our 1235 Mission office. For Harrison, in the fall, that will also become a distribution point for WIC benefits through a partnership with Public Health. Low-income mothers will be able to go to one site, apply for WIC, CalFresh, and also the diaper benefit. There's 7,000 low-income people a month who come into the 1440 Harrison office. So it's a great chance to package benefits for families with young children or pregnant women. So I encourage you to approve this extension, and I'm available for any questions. Lisa Trong, the executive director from Help a Mother Out, is in the audience, as well as the program director, Nora Nicholson.
Could those two people please stand up so I can see you? Thank you for being here. Thank you for being here. Is there a second?
Yes, I will second that. I would like to take this opportunity to recognize the foresight of Dan Kelly, who recognized the need and developed the program. And I'm gratified to see that it's taken hold and spreading. And also, Dan, on a personal note, you clearly demonstrated this morning in this meeting that you're a man for all seasons because you went from softball to museums to diapers.
I'm going to come to the commission meetings more often. Thank you.
Can I have a motion? All in favor?
Aye.
So moved.
Thank you.
Item B, requesting authorization to enter into a new agreement with Richmond Area Multi-Services to provide CalWORKs behavioral health and pre-vocational services.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
I am Jiro Arase, Community Services Program Monitor for Welfare to Work Services. The Department of Human Services requests authorization to enter into a new grant agreement with Richmond Area Multi-Services, or RAMS, for the period of July 1st, 2019 to June 30th, 2022, in the amount of $4,011,828, plus a 10% contingency, for a total amount not to exceed $4,413,011. The purpose of the grant is to provide behavioral health and pre-vocational services to CalWORKs clients in support of their efforts to attain self-sufficiency. Services such as assessment and counseling, psychoeducational groups, and soft skills training assist CalWORKs participants in obtaining meaningful employment and for continued success on the job. The interventions and support provided will be time limited to respond to the lifetime limits on the how long a CalWORKs client can receive supportive services. RAMS will provide clinical assessment and counseling services to 250 CalWORKs clients per year, including clients in Family Stabilization Program. RAMS will also provide learning needs assessments, develop and update curricula for soft skills training, facilitate psychoeducational groups, and provide ongoing case consultation to CalWORKs case managers. I am available to answer any questions, and Christina Shea, Director of Clinical Services from RAMS, is here as well.
Thank you for being here. Can I have a motion for approval?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
So moved. Thank you. Item C is Five Key Schools and Programs to provide academic assessment services for Welfare to Work participants and CalLEARN Educational Support Services. Hi, Christina. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning, Commissioners. Christina Iwasaki, Community Services Manager for Welfare to Work Services. The Department of Human Services requests authorization to enter into a new grant with Five Key Schools and Programs for the grant period of July 1, 2019 to June 30, 2022 in an amount of $298,584 plus a 10% contingency for a total amount not to exceed $328,442. The purpose of the grant is to provide academic assessment services to Welfare to Work participants and educational support services to pregnant and parenting teens in the CalLEARN program. The majority of jobs with good salaries in the present economy requires an escalating amount of academic skills and credentialing. Those without a minimum of a high school diploma are being left behind, as the lower the education level is, the lower the wages. Five Keys has a proven track record of working with low-income students with multiple barriers and has developed a unique program that has produced strong results for those who have not found success in the traditional classroom setting. For the academic assessment services, orientations and intake will be provided to CalWORKs, PAYS, CalFresh ABOD participants. Services will include transcript evaluation, verification of high school diploma, report of credits needed to apply for graduation, assistance with obtaining special education services, and referrals to high school diploma services and GED preparation services. And so this program will serve 600 participants annually. For the CalLearn program, CalLearn's a statewide program for pregnant and parenting teens in the CalWORKS program. It's designed to encourage pregnant and parenting teens to graduate from high school or its equivalent, become independent, and form healthy families. The program provides comprehensive case management and linkages to a wide range of supportive services, including medical care, job counseling, housing, legal services, and parenting education. Five Keys will assess each CalLearn participant's educational needs and determine an appropriate service plan through individual and small group sessions. Services will include transcript, evaluation, educational counseling, GED, high school equivalency assessment, assistance with enrollment or re-enrollment into San Francisco Unified School District schools or other educational programs, and independent GED instruction. And this program will serve 15 CalLearn participants annually. I'm available to answer any questions, and we have Doric Scarpelli and Dominic Charles from Five Keys as well.
Can I have a motion for approval? All in favor? Aye. Now calling on Vanita Dunlap. Item D is a new agreement with Family Support Services for safe care training to the Department of Public Health. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Vanita Dunlap, and I'm a program support analyst for Family and Children's Services. I have the pleasure of presenting the next three agenda items for safe care parenting education. The first commission memo before you pertains to the Family Support Services of the Bay Area and the Department of Public Health. The first commission memo before you pertains to the Family Support Services of the Bay Area and the Department of Public Health nurses. The Human Service Agency requests authorization to enter into a grant agreement with the Family Support Services of the Bay Area for the provision of safe care training and oversight to the Department of Public Health nurses for the period of July 1st, 2019 through June 30th, 2022 in the amount of $177,639 plus a 10% contingency of $17,764 for a total contract amount not to exceed $195,403. The purpose of this grant is to provide training and supervision for public health nurses in the maternal, child, and adolescent health section of the Department of Public Health so that they can continue to utilize the safe care, evidence-based, in-home parent education model for the prevention and intervention of child abuse and neglect. The maternal, child, and adolescent health public health nurse is a logical match for the safe care program. The Department of Public Health is committed to the use of this evidence-based practice in their home visits to families involved with child welfare to improve outcomes for families with young children. Nurses trained in safe care curricula provide this training during home visitation to identify families. Families that are typically identified and referred through the Family Treatment Court. The public health nurses typically target families with children ages birth through five who have open child welfare cases with San Francisco Family and Children's Services. This fiscal year, the public health nurses have graduated six families who have successfully completed all safe care modules. I would like to introduce to you Marcy Spaulding. She's a public health nurse in Family and Children's Services Nursing Unit. She's a charge nurse for the birth through five program. And Jenny Lopez, nurse manager, Family and Children's Services Nursing Unit. I'm glad to answer any questions you may have regarding this contract.
I have a question. I'm not sure I understand why this comes before us rather than the Department of Public Health.
I'm sorry?
I think it's wonderful. It's a wonderful program. And if we can do it better than they can, fine. But I'm just wondering.
So.
I can take it if you want. I'll take it. Commissioner, this is providing the tool to do in-home training of parents, basically, to prevent abuse and neglect. So it's a child neglect prevention effort for us. And so it directly aligns with keeping kids with their parents and safe at home.
Hi, Commissioners. Johanna Gendelman, the contract manager. The contract is with Family Support Services, and Family Support Services employs the trainers who provide the training to the nurses. And it's just an administrative thing that we have two separate contracts, one for the training and then one for the safe care proper. You're welcome.
Thank you.
Motion's made. Is there a second? Okay, all in favor? Aye. Thank you.
Thank you. And so the second commission minimal before you is for Family Support Services of the Bay Area and the Epiphany Center, formerly Mount St. Joseph, St. Elizabeth. The Human Service Agency requests authorization to enter into grant agreements with the Family Support Services of the Bay Area and the Epiphany Center for the provision of safe care parenting education for the period of July 1st, 2019 through June 30th, 2022 in the amount of $3,163,500. That would be $1,963,743 to Family Support Services and $1,199,757 to Epiphany, plus a 10% contingency of $316,350, for a total contract not to exceed $3,479,850. The purpose of these grants is to provide safe care parenting education, again, an evidence-based in-home parent education model for the prevention of child neglect to San Francisco families with children who are at risk for abuse or neglect. A little bit about safe care. It's an evidence-based in-home parent education program which focuses on health and safety for families, which is supported by research in the areas of effective parenting and child care techniques, child development, health, safety, and nutrition. Safe care targets families with children ages 0 through 5 who are at high risk for neglect or abuse. More than 60 research studies have documented the development and validation of safe care. For the last 8 years, the department has been utilizing safe care. It is designed specifically for child welfare and provides direct skill training to parents in child behavior management, activity planning, home safety, and child health care skills to intervene in and to prevent child maltreatment. Family Support Services and Epiphany have a long-standing partnership with Family and Children's Services, working regularly with our department and other key partners in multiple venues to improve outcomes for children and families. The grantees have offered safe care to San Francisco families since FCS started offering the program in 2011. The safe care model has been demonstrated to reduce child maltreatment, and our analysis confirms that this is true for San Francisco as well. An analysis of our clients completing safe care between July 1st, 2011 and December 31st, 2014, shows statistically significantly less reoccurrence of substantiated maltreatment within 12 months, 8% as opposed to statewide 10.6%. The safe care providers are very committed and work closely with us and other partners serving families that meet the eligibility criteria to coordinate and strengthen service delivery. Last fiscal year, 52 families successfully completed all modules and successfully graduated from the program. So far this year, 41 families have graduated. The grantees are sole source to provide these services. SafeCare is a branded service model that is evidence-based and has a very strict structure on fidelity and adherence to the model. It has a unique controlled structure of programmatic implementation and sustainability. At this point in time, only one source exists in San Francisco that could provide the structure and level of services the SafeCare program currently requires. The grantees employ certified SafeCare trainers and coaches whom the department has invested years in developing and certifying to their level of expertise. For the third year in a row, SafeCare San Francisco was recently awarded accreditation by the National SafeCare Training and Research Center for implementing their program with the highest standards. Not an easy feat. We would like to congratulate them, sitting here, for their hard work and perseverance in attaining this award. At this time, I would like to introduce to you the representatives from Family Support Services of the Bay Area, and that would be Aisha Franco, Family Preservation Program Director and SafeCare Coordinator. And from the Epiphany Center, we have Deborah Wright, Director, In-Home Services. I am glad to answer any questions you may have regarding this contract.
It's very important work, and I congratulate.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Item G, Juliet Halverson, Maximus Human Services to provide supplemental security income, screening application assistance, for SSI and benefit maintenance retention.
Good morning. Yes. Good morning, commissioners. Good morning, Trent. I am the program manager for foster care eligibility, and I'm here requesting authorization to enter into the contract for Maximus Human Services. Maximus provides Social Security administration benefits and SSI screening application assistance, benefit maintenance and retention of SSI data management for Family and Children Services. They screen all our youth for these benefits, that all the youth entering foster care. The benefits of receiving SSI can impact a family reunifying with a child to provide financial and medical assistance for disabled youth, and this helps immensely in providing stability for youth who are emancipating and ensures youth receiving SSI receive maximum benefits. Maximus also provides an essential service to the department in the recoupment of foster care placement funding and in meeting our mandates for annual screening of all applicable youth per AB 1331. Maximus has provided foster care eligibility with the service for the last five fiscal years and has proven responsive and offered extensive knowledge as a liaise for the department. SSI is a little bit complicated sometimes to navigate, and they've offered their services through this contract, which has been completely a huge help to us. They've also helped us set up a systematic business practice of maintaining benefits while effectively maximizing funding for the agency. They've been exemplary in organizing our fiscal accounting process and in the requirements for spending SSI excess funds for our youth that have accumulated in accounts. This service is a benefit to both the agency and to our youth, both financially and in offering permanency and stability. At this time, I'd like to ask if there's any questions or concerns that I can address.
I just have one question. Where is the agency located?
Maximus is on site here at 170 Otis. They have one representative.
The representative from the employee from Maximus is on site. Maximus as a company, I'm not sure where they're headquartered.
Oh, they're a national, they're a national organization.
Because yeah, the language in the memorandum says at the agency location.
Yes, they're placed here at 170 on the sixth floor. They have one representative here in our agency.
Is that clear? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry? The employee of Maximus is on site here doing the screening and the work. Yeah, Maximus is a national corporation, for-profit corporation. I don't know where they're headquartered.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
So moved.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Julia. Melissa Connolly, item H, is requesting authorization to enter a new contract with the California State Fresno Foundation, California Central Training Academy, and the Bay Area Academy to provide child welfare training services.
Good morning. I'm Melissa Connolly. I'm a program manager here at FCS, and I'm here seeking authorization on behalf of the Human Services Agency to enter a new contract with CSU Fresno for training the Family and Children Services workforce and some of our partners who provide services to families as well. The contract extends from July 1st, 2019 through June 30th, 2024, and the services are provided by the Bay Area Academy, which is a unit within the university that's located here in the Bay Area. The total cost of the contract is $2,889,560. There's a 10% contingency fee that brings it to a maximum $3,178,516. I'm happy to answer any questions you have about the services they provide.
Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
So moved.
Thank you.
Marlene Sanchez, item I, Reba Juntas to provide transitional employment services under the Community Jobs Program.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Marlene Sanchez from Welfare to Work. And if I may, I would like to present items I and J together. Same program.
We have to vote on each one.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. The Department of Human Services requests authorization to modify the existing grant agreements with Arriba Juntos and Young Community Developers for the period of July 1st, 2019 through June 30th, 2020 in the amount of $1,184,066 plus a 10% contingency for a total amount not to exceed $16,951,327. The purpose of the grant is to provide transitional employment services. The Community Jobs Program 1, or CJP 1, is a one-month subsidized workplace assessment, job readiness, and job placement activity for CalWORKs participants. The services include soft skills training, barrier remediation, and case management. Those participants who do not find a job within a month are then referred to the regular Community Jobs Program, or CJP, at Arriba Juntos. CJP is also a subsidized work experience, professional development, and case management model that was developed to assist participants in transitioning to permanent employment. The CJP activity is also available to the PACE, CalWORK, and Medi-Cal participants through Young Community Developers. CJP participants under both CBOs obtain marketable skills through a 3 to 6 month paid work experience at nonprofit community organizations, along with professional development and supportive case management. The full Community Jobs Program is key service for participants to meet work participation requirements and move to self-sufficiency. Please note that approximately 70% of the funding goes directly to participants' wages. And so if these modifications are approved, Arriba Juntos and Young Community Developers will serve up to 750 CalWORKs participants in the CJP-1 program and about 350 CalWORKs and PACE participants in CJP through this contract year. I am available to answer any questions. And from Arriba Juntos, we have Gladys Garcia, Diana Lematua, Andy Yi. And from Young Community Developers, we have Mr. Tim Waters.
Thank you for being here. Any questions? Can I ask for a motion of approval? Yes, we're voting on item I now, and then we have to have another vote shortly. Yes. All in favor? Aye.
For item J.
Go ahead.
For item J.
Yes. Can I have a motion for approval? Or you're making the presentation?
No, it's the presentation was done for both together. Items okay. I and J.
All right. Item J, motion for approval. All in favor? Aye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item K, calling on Maggie Donahue once again. For an existing grant agreement with Instituto Familiar de la Raza.
Okay. Good morning again, commissioners. We are requesting your authorization to approve an extension of the current contract with Instituto Familiar de la Raza for the period of July 1st, 2019 to June 30th, 2021 for an additional amount of $552,958. Instituto provides the coordination and referral triage for the Family and Children's Services Differential Response Program for families who are identified as at risk for future child maltreatment and can benefit from community-based multicultural services through the network of 10 family resource centers in San Francisco. Instituto offers training, quality assurance, and case consultation for the differential response liaisons who are located at each of these family resource centers, and also for a differential response liaison who is located at Riley Center and provides services for families experiencing domestic violence. Instituto is responsible for oversight of the DR processes, maintaining the procedures manual, and managing data systems to capture information on demographics, service utilization, service delivery outcome measures, and surveys. To refine our policies, practices, and procedures as a city. I'm pleased to say that Dr. Berta Hernandez, who is the Family Services Director for Instituto, is here if you have any questions. And let me just say, it's just, they're an incredible program. So, yay.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Are there any questions? Can I have a second? All in favor? Aye. Thank you.
Let's see, the next item is item L, and this is for a one-year renewal for our contract with St. Vincent de Paul Society Riley Center. This is for the period of July 1st, 2019 through June 30th, 2020 for an additional amount of $331,376. So we contract with St. Vincent de Paul Riley Center to work collaboratively with our FCS child welfare workers in an effort to provide comprehensive intervention, case consultation, and resource referrals for our families who are experiencing domestic violence. Two domestic violence specialists are co-located here with the hotline and emergency response workers on the fourth floor. And a third DV specialist is located at the St. Vincent de Paul Community Office and provides DV counseling and case management services for those families referred through Instituto who are on the differential response pathway. So no one is here from St. Vincent de Paul. So if there are any questions, I'm more than happy to answer them. Thank you.
Any questions, Commissioner? All in favor? Aye.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Item M, Jeffrey Nagy.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
My name is Jeff Nagy. I'm a program support analyst with Family and Children's Services. We're here to request authorization to modify the grant agreement with the lead agent homeless prenatal program for the period of July 1st, 2018 through June 30th, 2019. The purpose of the grant is to provide additional funding for housing subsidies for Bringing Families Home participants. Bringing Families Home is the only housing program in San Francisco that prioritizes child welfare.
Excuse me, could you speak
further in my... Is that better?
Thank you.
Sorry. Bringing Families Home is the only housing program in San Francisco that prioritizes child welfare-involved families. We do so by partnering with the San Francisco Housing Authority to issue Section 8 vouchers. Families receive assistance with the Section 8 application, housing search, lease-up, short- and long-term subsidies, and aftercare support. Thank you. To date, 41 families have been housed through the program, 39 with FUP vouchers and 2 families with subsidies. Additionally, there are 18 families actively working with homeless prenatal program on their housing. Funding from this modification will enable the grantee to provide critical rental subsidy and moving expenses support to families served over the life of this contract. This modification will allow 28 families who are in the process of completing the voucher application. At this time, if you have any questions, we're also joined by Dan Bowersox from Homeless Prenatal Program and Robin Love from HSA is here as well.
What does BFH stand for?
I'm sorry.
Can I ask for a
Yeah. This is the program I mentioned in my report about getting additional legislative funding for it.
Can I ask for a motion of approval? All in favor? Aye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item N. Bridget Leary.
Last but not least, thank you, Commissioners. Good morning. My name is Bridget Leary. I oversee research and evaluation within the planning unit here at HSA. And I'm here to request authorization to modify an existing contract that we have with Chapin Hall at the University of Chicago, which is to design and implement a performance-based contracting initiative for foster care services. So this would be for the period of July 1st, 2017 through June 2020 for an additional amount of $50,000. Just to refresh your memory on the background of this initiative, Chapin Hall is a child family community policy research organization at the University of Chicago, and they have a unique model for using administrative data and child welfare to allow provider agencies, foster care provider agencies, to observe their outcomes at the provider level. And that is that's a unique way to observe their outcomes, as at their level as opposed to the child level. What this work basically involves is partnering with HSA to prepare the administrative data so that we can observe the performance of our provider, our largest provider agencies, and then to provide technical assistance for those agencies and us to understand how to read those reports, how to plan for improved outcomes over time. We've been working with them since 2013 doing this. And we request the modification for one additional period to continue this work. Do you have any questions?
All in favor? Aye.
Thank you.
There's been no request for public comment, so our meeting is adjourned. Trent?
Deputy Director for Policy and Planning here at HSA. Deputy Director for our Policy and Planning Division. Yeah, so Dan Kelly and the Diaper Bank and so the Planning Group, which does a lot of analytics and research communications. And then we have Innovation Office, so it's support functions, research and support functions fall in my area. Yes. We're lucky to have that kind of support at a large agency like this.
I can sit down with you to discuss something that's everything, but you have to teach me.
Well, it's a lot. It's a lot. It's a big agency, so we're happy to have you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Yeah. Just wanted to introduce myself.
It works.
Thank you.
Dan from Home Australia.